Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is the 96th episode of Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Four more to go to get to 100. Well, today you might hear my co-host, which happens to be a train down on the railroad tracks near us, so pardon the noise, but it is a part of life out here. So anyway, how have you been this week? We've been shoveling snow from our decks at home almost every day, and the huge flocks of gray-crowned rosy finches have returned. A little northern pygmy owl showed up earlier this month, looking to feed on those flocks too. It's not easy being a bird, especially in winter. Oh, but the moon is just amazing, reflecting on all that snow. It's waxing full, building up to the full moon this week. I'll have a little more for you about that in the second half of today's show, but right now, here is our Desert Oracle Radio episode. It was produced by Ken Lane, January 10th, 2020, and it's titled Messages from the Old Gods. And isn't it strange how 4 years, no, let's make it 5 years, can go by and not a lot is changing? Okay, while you ponder that, enjoy the episode.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, a new year, and a new decade in our current case, is a time of reflection, whether we want it or not. It's impossible to ignore the new year because you don't even need a calendar to know it's happening. It's really winter now, and the days become a little bit longer, a little bit more daylight, so you can get out and do whatever it is you need to do. But unless you live in a cave with no cell service or Wi-Fi or newspapers or magazines or the TV or a neighbor who made the unfortunate assumption that you want to hear his opinions on the news, you are aware that we are in a time of discontent. The situation is not all bad. There are hopeful signs everywhere, sometimes briefly camouflaged by dreadful signs. And then there are dreadful signs that are just plain dreadful, and all you can do is keep going and remember that there are always dreadful signs for those of us who are on watch duty. You can drive yourself crazy with the bad news with a cold analysis of current events. So why not try personal reflection? That's sort of popular these days. Better to engage in a little personal reflection at the start of a new year, a new decade. Let everybody else go nuts about the wars and the economy and the politics for a while. I guarantee they won't miss you. They're not listening anyway. They're just making noise. Can't change the news today, but you can change something in yourself if it's bothering you. You can quit vaping, maybe, or quit watching 12 hours of TV a day, or get outside and get some exercise, which is free and requires no gym membership, no yoga instructor, no guru, no personal trainer. You can change something that will affect your long term. When decades and centuries end, a lot of people really take stock of their lives. Sometimes they blame themselves for things that are not of their own making, not their own fault. If you really wanted to be a Major League Baseball pitcher and you just weren't born with that sort of arm, well, you can still play baseball and have fun. And don't beat yourself up for not being one of the 50 or so people on Earth at any given time who might be pitching in the major leagues. Don't worry about it. Don't beat yourself up for not accomplishing something that you never worked for in the first place. I've had tragic barroom conversations with all kinds of people in states of permanent distress because they wanted to win the Nobel Prize in science, or they wanted to be a famous inventor, or they wanted to be the Pope. And you might say, you know, you're not even Catholic, etc., and all the tears just flow. But there is a new decade ahead, whether we want it or not. And it is a good time to get everything in line, get everything in order, so you can finally move to the desert like you've always wanted to do. Volunteer at the national park or the land trust. Plant baby cactus. Just sit on your 2.5 acres and enjoy the clouds going by. Enjoy the ravens flying overhead. And do not let that nut job on the next parcel over start with his political opinions. You prevent that problem by never allowing it to start. A friendly wave from a safe distance is about as much as you want to do there.
Thank you.
George Van Tassel, architect of the Integratron, speaking at Giant Rock in 1958. Let's open up the Desert Oracle mailbag, if I can even find the thing. I've been dragging it around for half a year now, trying to figure out where to put the thing so I will remember to get a letter or a postcard out now and then. I do read all the letters and postcards. And I even read some of the email and Facebook messages and whatever, but that's a joyless pursuit. So I just sort of skim that stuff. It takes a little time and effort to put a stamp on an envelope or a postcard. It takes a little time to write your message by hand or type it out on a typewriter. And as a result, letters and postcards are almost always good. And emails and text messages and notifications and DMs and social media messages, etc., are almost always bad. Somebody sitting on a toilet somewhere decides to type with their thumbs for a few seconds until their boss bursts in and says, "Get back to work." I mean, how is that going to be good? Dear Desert Oracle, I listened to your episodes about the cattle mutilations. Very spooky. I know you said nobody has ever been arrested and no suspects have ever been named. So what's going on? Those ranchers in Australia talked about aliens and government conspiracies and robots. And the American ranchers talked about devil worshippers. But you did not seem to accept any of those hypotheses. I am curious to know if you have a personal theory. Samantha in Tucson. P.S. Please don't use my last name. Well, thanks for writing, Samantha, and thanks for the nice card. It's a saguaro cactus wearing a Santa Claus hat and some of those old-fashioned Christmas bulbs. And the cactus has rosy cheeks, which is festive. And it's a cartoon, so I don't want any of our touchier listeners getting riled up and wanting to find out who put a Santa hat on the cactus. I think the cattle mutilation situation has something to do with us, with our habits of old. Because we got the idea that invisible spirits took satisfaction from our acknowledgement of their existence and presumed power. And we began offering some of our food animals to these unseen gods and devils. People of the Stone Age and Bronze Age and Iron Age made burnt offerings to the spirits and forces they believed to had an impact on their lives. We would ritually slaughter an animal, maybe a bull to Jupiter or a goat to Yahweh, a stag or maybe a human prisoner to Odin. And then we hoped these forces would show us some special care, at least some mercy. And then the world changed. We quit being afraid of the gods and devils because we mostly quit believing in them. We quit believing in their real presence in our daily lives. Maybe the old spirits and the old demons miss when we sacrifice bulls and lambs to them. It wasn't that long ago, not in demon years. They would be aware that we are still here, but we don't sacrifice livestock anymore. Maybe they're angry about this. And every now and then they build up enough energy to zap onto the rangeland and laser knife a bunch of parts that look tender, and they eat it up like some blood fuel, and then they vanish in a flash of light. They disintegrate back into the ether. Now, oftentimes with these weird stories, these encounters with the others, there is a message, a moral. People come back from the experience with a purpose, an understanding. They often become intensely committed to environmental causes. And they seem to burn brighter, somehow cured of the existential crisis. Because they are now branded with some mysterious psychic mark. These are moments of transcendence, of being born again. The founders of every world religion experienced something like this and became so transformed that they accumulated followers and adherents who hoped to ritually reproduce that moment. Religion. It's our weirdest invention. If we invented it at all. Because for all we know, we were taught to worship the swirling intelligence that occasionally manifests itself. Just often enough to be memorable, just enough to make sure we never forget it's out there. We were taught to give it meat. And then we stopped. We became rational, we got real, did some adulting, we believed in facts and figures and the basic rules of the game. But it turns out somebody, something, anything can just turn over the chessboard. What are you gonna do about it? That's right, just what they figured. You're not going to do anything much. Did you think the multimedia holographic electoral map was going to prevent somebody from flipping the chessboard? In a time of magic, anything can happen. The forces are swirling around looking for a host. looking for things that make them strong. But like my friend Brendan Mays always says, maybe your concept of good and evil means nothing to them. And you know that is likely to be the case. Maybe it's artificial intelligence running a contact program that attempts to anticipate the development of our mental and psychic abilities, trying to run a balance between the romantic and practical aspects of human nature. Who knows? Maybe someday we'll figure out the code and it's the DNA of a roadrunner divided by the RNA of a jackrabbit, something like that. Spiritual division, very complicated. Probably involves quantum spectrum monitoring, Madar modes, the whole enchilada. And maybe it's trying to tell us something about beef. About the keeping of cattle, one of the key elements of the development of our human civilization. You know, the oldest known ceremonial temple on Turkey's grassland with the great columns, with the relief carvings of scorpions and snakes. The understanding today is that the place served as a giant beer and barbecue festival grounds. An early Coachella. People did not seem to live there full time. Instead, they came in droves at certain times of the year, the solstice and the equinox most likely. And they harvested wheat to make beer and great brew houses. And then the cattle were fenced in off the grassland and were slaughtered to feed the masses and surely to feed the spirits, the forces, the ones who called themselves gods. What a time that must have been. People would have been chanting and singing and playing drums and pan flutes and probably dancing around or standing solemnly. And maybe the gods would even make an appearance now and then, like happens sometimes in the Old Testament. A column of fire on the desert, a fire that did not burn the ground. That's a spotlight. That's a spotlight that comes out of the belly of something that doesn't mind pacing you and your fellow travelers at all. Get Moses over here, see if he can explain this. What's the message? What are they trying to say? I think it's a message about the cattle business, honestly. That's something like 20% of all greenhouse gases. Cattle out there gassing up the joint all over the world and more in the places where Western tastes are spreading. And I'm all for Western tastes, but it's hard to think about the absurdity of the cattle mutilations and not think it's an environmental message. Like the environmental messages that contactees have received since the days of George Van Tassel up at Giant Rock. I mean, they've got the no-cow burgers and tacos all over the high desert now, and people are buying it up, the kids in particular. They do not have the luxury of dying before it gets real bad. So the kids know in their hearts. They better know. So, Samantha, on the subject of cattle mutilations, I would like to offer these two theories which make more sense than the space alien and government conspiracy and cow-killing cult theories that are all openly spoken of by ranch owners and law enforcement. The mutilations might be done by lonely demons who are pretty dumb but have some occasional brute force to show their unhappiness with being forgotten by these modern ranchers with their iPads and their Disney Plus And the mutilations might be symbolic language meant to save our own hides, as it were. Are there lessons in the mutilations about how lab-grown meat might work better, be more cost-efficient, and better in general? Growing organ tissue is much more complex than growing muscle meat, it turns out. That's what these new fake meat companies, meat alternative companies, are learning. Maybe we should look into that. As for ranches, I love the old ranches. The old ranchos and western ranches with buffalo are pretty easy on the environment, it turns out. Make them all buffalo ranches. Lots of room for everybody. And the rest of the ranches, you make those conservation areas. You buy those ranches with conservation tax money. You keep the people living there, working the land there. Healthy rangeland is incredible when it comes to being a natural, cheap, and easy carbon sink. Cottonwoods and grassland, even dried up old desert range, is a tremendous carbon sink. And it just gets better when you don't overgraze it and leave it alone, like that Chernobyl. We could do without the radioactive fallout part. We've had quite enough of that in the desert Southwest. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio. We broadcast Friday nights from KCDZ 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree. New sounds tonight by Red Blue Black Silver. Go see his whole discography on Bandcamp. Get our podcast wherever. If you're still in the giving state of mind, we run this operation off the occasional proceeds from our pocket-sized field guide, published on a consistently irregular schedule, but always worth the wait, we like to think. Subscribe to that if you like, and we've also got a Patreon set up as well. Become a patron of Desert Oracle for as little as $2 a month. Thank you for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Well, the full moon is coming up January 13th, called the Wolf Moon by some, Great Spirit Moon by others, and more names than I can list here by even more. It will be a great thing to see if the skies are clear. In one tradition I read about, it is the first moon of creation and is a time to honor silence and recognize one's place in creation. Here's a little bit about things celestial in January from space.com.
What's up for January? Cue the planet parade. Saturn and Venus cross paths. Mars expresses its opposition. And the outlook for the quadranted meteors. In January, you'll have the opportunity to take in four bright planets in a single sweeping view. All month after dark, you'll find Venus and Saturn in the southwest for the first couple of hours, while Jupiter shines brightly high overhead and Mars rises in the east. Uranus and Neptune are there too, technically, but they don't appear as bright planets. These multi-planet viewing opportunities aren't super rare, but they don't happen every year, so it's worth checking it out. Now, these events are sometimes called alignments of the planets, and while it's true that they will appear more or less along a line across the sky, that's what planets always do. That line is called the ecliptic, and it represents the plane of the solar system in which the planets orbit around the sun. This is, incidentally, why we sometimes observe planets appearing to approach closely to each other on the sky, as we view them along a line while they careen around the cosmic racetrack. This is exactly what we'll be seeing from Venus and Saturn as they head for a super close approach in mid-January. After the beginning of the month, they quickly get closer and closer each evening, appearing at their most cozy on the 17th and 18th, before going their separate ways. Remember, they're really hundreds of millions of miles apart in space, so when you observe them, you're staring clear across the solar system. Mars reaches opposition this month, which is when the planet lies directly on the opposite side of Earth from the Sun, forming a straight line. This is around the time when the planet is at its closest to Earth, making it appear at its biggest and brightest. For Mars, oppositions happen about every 2 years. This one won't be the most spectacular ever, but it's still closer than average and provides a great opportunity to observe the nearby planet where NASA has 5 missions currently operating. And on the 13th, the full moon cozies up to Mars, appearing super close to the red planet that evening. Across the US and eastern Canada, the moon will appear to pass in front of Mars over a couple of hours as the pair rise into the eastern sky. Mars will also be the lone planet in the sky on January mornings. You'll find it hanging out in the west in morning twilight. The quadranted meteors peak in the early morning hours on January 3rd. Interference from moonlight won't be a problem, as the moon is a mere crescent and sets early in the night. The way to see the most meteors is to observe after midnight from clear, dark skies away from bright city lights, and let your eyes adapt to the dark. The meteor rate will be highest as dawn approaches, and you'll see more meteors from rural locations than in the suburbs. Now, this is a shower best seen from the northern hemisphere, and observers in the northwest and Pacific region will likely have the best viewing this year. Stay up to date on all of NASA's missions exploring the solar system and beyond at science.nasa.gov. I'm Preston Dykes from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and that's what's up for this month.
How about a little music to think about that full moon? This is the Wolf Moon Waltz by Becky Ainge. The natural things around us are going to need a lot of protection in the coming 4 years, I suspect. Let's start with readings about some of the smallest ones. Here are the readings from Nature, A Day at a Time, by author, illustrator, and naturalist Kathy Katz. So the reading for January 12th is about nematodes. Nematodes, commonly known as roundworms, are almost microscopic white worms that thrash and coil energetically in soil. A spade full of dirt has millions of them. They are the most widespread and varied of animals on Earth. All animals, including birds, rodents, snakes, insects, and humans, can be hosts for roundworms. Roundworms burrow within the muscles, skin, glands, organs, intestines, eyeballs, liver, and nostrils, living off the fluids of their hosts. Some of these parasites are harmless, but some, like tapeworms, can grow to several yards and deprive the host of nourishment. The nematodes shown here, she has a little illustration here, of course, are roundworms that live in human intestines. Males are slightly shorter and thinner than females and always have a coiled tail. And then there's a quote from Natalie Angier in The Beauty of the Beastly. She says, "Parasites are part of the reason that we and most species have sex, rather than merely cloning ourselves in twain. We must stir our genes together in ever-changing combinations to develop resistance to parasites." The reading for January 13th is about tapeworms. Tapeworms, or cestoda, like roundworms, commonly use human intestines as hosts. But unlike roundworms, they anchor themselves with suckers into our flesh. They enter our body when we eat pork, fish, or beef, carrying the worms. After securing their position, the tapeworms begin to absorb all nearby nutrients from our intestines. New tapeworms are formed by budding, or mating, by transferring sperm to another segment, creating more and more segments while growing longer and more demanding of our food. Sooner or later, the oldest ones leave the body, carrying eggs to an intermediate host, pig, cow, or fish. And the quote at the bottom of the page is from Marcus Aurelius. "The first rule is to keep an untroubled spirit. The second is to look things in the face and know them for what they are." Well, this year, I have been wanting to include some Montana authors writing about winter in these second half hours of this show, and this week I found some offerings from Rick Bass. These clips are from Writing the West, A Conversation and Readings with Rick Bass, produced by Montana State University in 2015. First up is Rick's introduction to chainsaws.
October 5th. My chainsaw is a Steel 034. It's orange and white, made in Germany, and it's not a professional saw, but almost. It's big and strong, a wild horse, and I'm scared to death of it. I've read and reread the 60-page instruction book several times. My Steel starts like a fine car, fuel-injected, and rumbles nicely with a throbbing, rattling purr when it's set on slow idle. It's complex and has all sorts of tricks and gimmicks, such as carburetor preheating, which is required at 0 degrees and below. Most people cut wood in the winter so that it warms twice. You work up a sweat sawing and then get warm again burning it. The manual uses phrases like "blipping the throttle," and is chock full of sentences like, "A roll-o-matic guide bar is not necessary to separately lubricate the sprocket nose because the chain oil which flows to the bearing by way of the bar groove during normal operation is adequate for lubrication." And this is necessary because high contraction stresses would otherwise occur as the chain cools down to ambient temperature, especially at extremely low outside temperatures, and cause damage to the crankshaft and bearings. I'm a slow reader, even with things I understand. I trace the words over and over again with my finger, saying some of the sentences out loud. Elizabeth believes that this concentration on and fascination with the owner's manual is boy stuff, a guy thing, that I'm enjoying the schematics and such, the hard-edged rules and facts. But it's not that at all. I'd rather be walking through the woods or sitting by the river reading poetry, but this is something I've got to learn. This is something that is going to keep us warm. There's something in the manual about white finger. I've heard people in the saloon talking about this condition, have seen guys who have it chronically. It's amazing they're still able to work. Their fingers are swollen and white, scaly and flaky, and they can hardly move them. They stare at their hands while sitting in the bar, holding a drink or reaching for a mug, as if the hands do not belong to them. From the manual, prolonged use of chainsaws or other machines exposing the operator to vibrations may produce white finger disease, Raynaud's phenomenon. This phenomenon reduces the hand's ability to feel and regulate temperature, produces numbness and burning sensations, and may cause nerve and circulation damage and tissue necrosis. The way to avoid white finger is not mentioned. I suppose I should rest and exercise my fingers every so often, get some blood flowing into them. I should cut a cord or so and then set the saw down to rest it and myself. I need my fingers to write with, and go for a walk up into the woods. If there were not a disease like white finger, a danger of it, I would have to create one. I've got a hard hat, goggles and earplugs, steel-toed red-winged boots and leather gloves. I'm scared to death of this big saw, and yet I'm excited about using it. A little bit about how I feel about teaching here.
Rick continues as he explains why he was willing to risk getting white finger.
It's from December. It's December 19th journal entry. A cold front came down out of Alaska yesterday, dropping the temperature from 20 above to 15 below in less than an hour. Branches and limbs blowing from the trees, everything tumbling past, and the wind biting, ripping. The temperature kept dropping after dark, crackling cold stars, plunging, bottoming out around 38, 39 below, and then the wind disappeared. It's staying that cold, the air motionless. You guys don't know anything about that. The way they said it would be. 40 below at night and warming up to 10 or 12 below during the day. We leave to visit relatives in a few days, relatives in warmer country, and we'll turn off the water, drain the pipes, lock up. But for now, we sleep in front of the fireplace, wood burning around the clock, turning the pages of books clumsily with our gloved hands. 40 below. We're a little frightened. We're at the mercy of the cold. We hope for mercy. It's as if the brutal cold is looking for something, passing over, searching. I hope it doesn't find what it's looking for here. I want it to move on. We hide in our sleeping bags. The fire crackles, but it doesn't seem to put out any heat. We can't get close enough to it. This cold cannot last 3 days, 4 days, a week at the most, and we must remember that. Blankets over the trucks and car in the garages. The generator won't turn over. Can't get the valves to open, too cold. We read, we sleep. We can't get warm. But this won't last.
Maybe you've noticed grizzly bears have continued to be a topic of debate here in this state. Here are Terry Tempest Williams and Doug Peacock from 8 years ago in a piece from SaveTheYellowstoneGrizzly.org that I think is still relevant.
If we lose the grizzly in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem, there will be no greater Yellowstone. It is the emblematic presence in this region, and that's what we're fighting for.
You know, the most courageous act you can do in your life is take a chance and go love something. You know, love something that's bigger, outside of your own life, something you really cannot protect, but love it anyway. And fight your butt off to protect, in my case, this creature, this grizzly bear, all wild animals. And we will lose, but we will have loved, and you lose nothing by loving.
It was Doug who took me out into the Yellowstone to see a bear, to experience those slash marks on an aspen, to quiet one's soul enough to experience the spirit of a bear. That's what's here now. That's what should always be here.
The only place that's protected is Yellowstone National Park boundaries. Very few grizzlies spend their life without crossing a park boundary, going outside. If they can be hunted in the national forest and all the private lands beyond, that's it. You know, no bear will escape that. It'll not just be a legal hunting season with permits. It'll create an ambience where anybody can kill a grizzly for any other reason. That'll happen 1,000 times. The life of bears will be made cheap and they will not survive.
We are at a crossroads. And we now have an unholy power to decide the fate of other species. What we don't realize is in this unholy power of delisting a species like the grizzly, we are delisting our very souls. Public lands, public commons, the place where humans and bears and wildness meet. We're talking about a reverence for life. It's that simple. It's that profound. Our souls hang in the balance. No delisting. The Endangered Species Act is working. Let us not err on the side of a politics of a $50 hunting fee. A head on the wall. The absence on the ground.
There are some local events I want to tell you about this week. Monday, January 13th, is the Sacagawea Audubon Monthly Program at Hope Lutheran Church. It's a brief history on the origin and evolution of birds with Ashley Hall, Outreach Program Manager of the Museum of the Rockies. The in-person meeting will be held Monday, January 13th, 2025, at Hope Lutheran Church. A social begins at 6:30 p.m. and the program begins at 7 p.m. Attendees are encouraged to bring their own reusable cups. And if you'd rather attend online, you can just go to the webpage, sacagaweaaudubon.org, that's all one word, and click on the monthly program link, and the article has a virtual program registration link. Attendees, whether in person or virtual, are encouraged to share their bird sightings at this and every monthly program. Tuesday, January 14th, there's a lecture at the Bozeman Public Library from 6:30 p.m. to 7:45 p.m. Scientist and award-winning author Lauren E. Oakes shares stories from her new book, Tree Keepers, The Race for a Forested Future, and that's from Basic Books 2024. So for many, planting a tree has become a catch-all way to do something good for the planet. But to what extent can trees really save us, and how? Oakes tackles these questions by taking readers on a poetic and practical journey through the science behind and the legitimacy of the global reforestation movement. And then, Thursday, January 16th, is the Gallatin Valley Earth Day kickoff event for their 2025 series. And the title of this program is Damn It, Partnering with Beavers to Heal the Planet with Ben Goldfarb. And that's Thursday, January 16th. 6 p.m. is the reception and 7 p.m. is the talk. And there'll be a panel discussion after that. And this event is being held at the Emerson Center for the Arts in Bozeman. And there's a little blurb here. In his book, Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter, Ben Goldfarb reveals that our modern conception of a healthy ecosystem is wrong. Ben will discuss the history and biology of this world-changing species, how beavers can help us fight drought, flooding, and wildfires, and how we can coexist with this challenging but vital rodent. and it is presented in partnership with Madison Gallatin Trout Unlimited, with support from Gallatin Watershed Council, Sacagawea Audubon Society, Gallatin Wildlife Association, Montana Freshwater Partners, Sims, and Greater Yellowstone Coalition. You can go to GallatinValleyEarthDay.org to sign up for a link to the virtual program if you cannot attend in person. Well, it sounds like the squirrel is annoyed, and it sounds like our snowplow for our area is coming down the road. So everything's kind of going along normally here on a snowy day. And I just wanted to say, I hope that you can find a way to support your brothers and sisters that are going through recovery, whether it's from wildfires in California or digging out from our most recent snowfalls or a personal catastrophe or crisis. It's just good to be able to help each other. And I wish you all safety and good health and good life. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to Kathy Katz and Space.com, Becky Ainge, Rick Bass, Terry Tempest Williams, Doug Peacock, and MSU for their contributions to inspire us all. Thanks to KGVM and its supporters, and thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 on Sunday nights and 9 on Monday mornings. Our past shows are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams. Thanks to Neil Young for his song, Wolf Moon, from his album, Promise of the Real, to take us out today.
Parting clouds, I know some hearts were broken. Big crows still fly in your sky. Herds of elk roam upon your meadow. Your eagle soars across my eye, while you withstand the thoughtless plundering. Wolf moon, keep on shining. Your days rolling by in timeless grace. Your heart just keeps on beating inside the beauty of this place. Less fish swimming your ocean, old ice floating in your sea. Still you hold against the constant plundering. fields of life, your golden fields of wheat. Windy fields of barley at your feet, while you endure the thoughtless plundering.